You're listening to Your Highness Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Crash, and...
I'm your co-host, JR Crash.
Hey, JR, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing, Diana?
You know I'm always good when I'm with you.
Oh.
So we're going to start this episode, as we do every episode, with our fave pot and fave not pot. And in case you have never listened to an episode before this, this is our segment where we talk about our favorite cannabis-related item at the moment and our favorite non-cannabis-related item. So I'm going to start because I'm a Leo and that's how we do things. So my fave pot right now is from the Healing Rose, which is a deep friend of the pod. It's their CBD bath soak. Laura Beener, the founder or the co-founder of the Healing Rose, generously donated a bunch of these CBD bath soaks in their Summer Oasis limited edition scent. And if you are in the Harford County area this Friday, October 27th, you can stop by the Joppa Rise dispensary. And the first 25 people that come by will get a free small size CBD bath soak from the Healing Rose. So please stop by and see us. We'll be there from 12 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. And we'll have a lot of other fun things to give away. And you get to meet me in real life. That's pretty cool.
It's pretty exciting. It's pretty exciting meeting Diana.
Some may argue with that, but you know. Anyway, what's your fave pot right now?
My fave pot is actually not a product of any kind. It's actually the representation of cannabis in the media. Just because it's spooky season, I was reflecting back on like the old horror movies of the 80s and really the startup period of like, you know, the if you're consuming drugs or having premarital sex that you're gonna die. You know, so generally speaking, whenever cannabis popped up in a horror movie, it was generally just so a character could say some funny slash really annoying things and then die relatively quick. That's all it was. That was kind of turned on its head a little bit with the movie Cabin in the Woods, where they actually played on that trope a little bit, but instead made it so that the cannabis user was actually the one that figured everything out, was the one that was most instinctively understanding the situation and how to get through the situation. And really, from there on, you've been starting to see it more normalized on television programs and movies where you may have characters that do consume cannabis, but it's not their entire narrative. You know, they're not just there to say something dumb and then die. They're just regular characters, and that's just one aspect of their life. And just that normalization in the media, not making it so outlandish and cartoonish, I think is a positive step in the direction of cannabis culture.
I like that, and I agree. We need more of that, I guess, in horror. But I don't really watch horror movies, so I'll say
well,
in all
other, like, and dramas and comedies, too, they make people consume cannabis without them just being, like, the butt of every joke.
Right.
And not murdered. Not a lot of murder in comedies, but, like, you know.
Well, I agree, and I'm happy that you found that in your horror-watching experiences. So my fave not pot right now is the Soft Power Collective, and I will link to it in the show notes, but they host a Soft Power Virtual Choir. It's a decolonized, trauma-informed virtual choir community. So you can actually catch the choir, I don't want to say practices because that's not what it is, but they have it on YouTube so that you can catch it as a replay if you didn't get it on in the live, when it's live. So anyway, what's your fave not pop right now?
My fave not pop is Goosebumps.
Your fave not pop?
Not pop. Not pot. Because this is pop. This is pop culture all the way. Nice solid Goosebumps. I like how yours was something that was like very deep and healing. And I'm like, I like R.L. Stine's Goosebumps.
Yeah, but that can be healing.
It can be healing. And actually, that's why I like it. You know, that very low stakes horror. You know, when I was a kid, you know, that was something that really ignited the flames of imagination for me, was those low stakes horror. It was just pure imagination. Nothing, it didn't have to be firmly standing in any form of reality. And, you know, I just fell in love with it, you know, as a kid with Are You Afraid of the Dark, you know, that TV show, and then reading the Goosebumps books. And I tell you what, last night we were watching a new Goosebumps show, and not only does it have an overarching narrative throughout the entire season, but each episode also kind of highlights one of the books, a certain aspect of the book, whether it be the predictive camera that shows a cursed future, or the haunted mask, you know, the dummy, the Night of the Dummy is coming up in a future episode, you know, but still has that overarching, you know, storyline. And, you know, being able to, like, hang out at night, the air is getting crisp, you can look outside and see the changing leaves and wet leaves on the ground from the rain, and you're just watching some low-stakes horror where you don't have to worry about anyone's head exploding at any given minute. You know, the worst thing that could happen is someone breaks their arm. It's just, it's so nice and healing, especially in this October month.
Yeah. Right. If that's your type if that's your type of escape.
If you want to heal the world, Goosebumps.
Yeah. There you go.
R.L. Stine's Goosebumps.
I never knew when I was in middle school reading those books that they had the secret.
Oh yeah.
To world peace in them.
That's what it all when Dan Brown was writing his books about the Holy Grail. He didn't know this at the time, but what he was really searching for was an R.L. Stine Goosebumps book.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
That's the
Is that the new hot take?
That is the take.
Okay. I love the benefits of functional mushrooms, but finding a way to incorporate them into my wellness plan can be time-consuming and, frankly, kind of unappetizing. That's why the founders of Alice spent so much time and thought into creating a fun and delicious way to consume them. With the motto, Indulge, Don't Endure, the female-founded brand combines the best organic, fruiting body mushrooms with the best nootropics and adaptogens. Not only are Alice mushroom chocolates, that's right, I said chocolates, packaged in a way that makes getting your daily dose of mushrooms easy, but their chocolates are formulated specifically to enhance different moments in your day, with their nightcap chocolate for sleep and their brainstorm chocolate for focus and energy. Listeners can get 20% off using the code YOURHIGHNESS when they visit alicemushrooms.com. That's code YOURHIGHNESS at alicemushrooms.com. Switching gears a bit, we're going to continue the conversations that we've been having about how attitudes about other people's drug of choice is the antithesis of a harm reduction mentality. Put simply, there are a lot of opinions out there about what people should be consuming and how they should be consuming it and where they're sourcing what they consume, where it's coming from. There's a lot of discussion about all of that. And so we've had these conversations and we'll continue to have them, especially as we see people talking about it online. And one of the biggest things I've been seeing is now that there's a rise in psychedelic use, there are these attitudes in the psychedelic space as well. And I'm of the belief that we can't really compartmentalize because these are all alternative methods. And also, they're all considered drugs, right? Because even though people don't like that term, that word, a drug is any chemical substance that affects the functioning of living things and the organisms, such as bacteria, fungi, viruses that infect them.
Yeah. Also, a lot of these arguments are sprung up almost from a tribalism of inflating the importance of their drug of use, of lack of a better word. You know, a lot of people thinking that the drug that they are deciding to consume for medicinal purposes is grander and more healing than it actually is for everybody. And then they impose that on other people just because they'll feel something from it they assume that everyone else will automatically feel something from it, which is actually why, you know, we have things like DSHEA, you know, DSHEA being the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994. It was originally designed so that supplements and stuff like that didn't have to be as heavily regulated by the FDA for good manufacturing to be sold. But on a counterpoint of that, it also keeps them from being able to essentially say whatever they want to say. You know, coming back from, you know, you've seen the old movies of the snake oil salesman riding into town and selling bottles of elixirs and saying it can do whatever that person needs it to do. And that's the problem that you can run into sometimes with supplements, because they're not fully tested and regulated by the FDA as purported fact that they can cure or treat something. So you have to stay away from that verbiage and that language by saying, like, it promotes things. You know, I can't say that it cures or treats anxiety or depression, but you can say something promotes, you know, a more uplifting attitude.
Yes, and while we recognize how unfair this can be to a lot of small businesses, because, you know, I just spoke about the Healing Rose, and I love their products, and I will shout off the rooftops how much I love it.
It can come across as delegitimizing.
Right.
You know, by saying, like, oh, this only can promote things. You can't actually say it treats them. It can actually, you know, go the opposite direction of what we want by delegitimizing it and making it harder to speak about it.
Yes, it can make it harder to speak about it. It because you want to say, okay, this really could cure your sore muscles. But what you don't want, or at least what I am getting tired of hearing, is I just pop one of these in my mouth and I'm good for the whole day. That's great for you if that's the truth, honestly. But
exactly. So that's where it goes in with DSHEA. That's why I can't say it actually treats and cures, because to say that means that it would have an overarching effect on everyone that does it. But it doesn't. Whenever you're dealing with something that's natural, it's going to affect different in everybody. It depends on how they metabolize it, how they absorb it. There's so many variants.
Setting, you know.
Exactly. So you can't just say this does this. So you may take something that is great for your anxiety, but give it to your friend and it's horrible for them. And then in turn they do find something that's a different plant that helps them better, and then you're going to judge them for that?
Yeah.
You know, that takes away from everything that promotes healing at all, you know, by dictating what healing looks like for everybody.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. And I'm just going to read some quotes here. So I mentioned earlier that this is happening in the psychedelic space as well. It's happening in all of the spaces of alternative health. And Sophie Mikhailova, I'm so sorry if I'm butchering your last name, but she is the host of Sophie Land and also an excellent writer. And she has a publication called Shroomtown on Substack. She wrote an article called What is Psychedelic Exceptionalism? And she speaks on this often. But she has some really great points in this article, and I'm just going to read a couple of quotes. Drugs have been, are, and will continue to be a part of human life. Psychedelic exceptionalism goes against the principles of harm reduction. Decriminalization and legalization of all drugs will save lives. I urge you to think about this in the context of your life. If you were a psychedelics user, what makes you so different? What makes you so special? What is really the difference between your microdosing protocol and someone else's recreational cocaine habit, and why? Harm reduction is the work of reducing risks around drug use, and this looks like education, advocacy, and policy reform. It is not only about changing the conversation around psychedelics, but removing the stigma and advocating for the decriminalization of all drugs and the people who use them, from recreational consumers to those with dependencies who need access to rehabilitation programs.
Yeah. You know, that's a huge thing, especially we know a lot about that firsthand just coming from Florida, you know, where it's very much segmented of this drug is okay, this drug is not. I used to work for a kava bar, and Kava can give a very calm, relaxed feeling, and it's very nice for me, but it isn't for everybody. But you did hear a very undercurrent, you know, of negativity towards things like cannabis, you know, or alcohol. It became like a holier-than-thou attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people aren't realizing that they're still consuming something, though it may be medicinal for them, you know, but then not understanding other people consuming things that would be medical or therapeutic for them.
Yes.
You know, it was a very much, you know, only on my playground kind of a feel.
I'm glad you brought up the Kava Bar, because the other items sold at the Kava Bar that people were very holier than thou about was Kratom. And I found the perfect tweet to encapsulate the issues I find when I talk about Kratom amongst other cannabis users who have never tried it. This tweet says, "I use Kratom for chronic pain, and the amount of elitism I see from the medical cannabis crowd is infuriating. They are both plants. Kratom has minimal harms compared to the impacts of my disability without pain relief. I cannot tell you how many times I have had a conversation with someone in the cannabis community and mentioned that Kratom is really what helps me with my pain, my chronic pain. I mean, cannabis does a lot of things, but it doesn't touch my pain in the way that Kratom does." And they'll just do a cursory Google search if they don't know anything about it and go, "Oh, well, that, I don't know, it's a controversial topic," or, "I don't know, that looks dangerous. I don't really want to associate myself with Kratom."
And it really comes down to, are you going to be a plant medicine advocate, or are you just going to push your thing of choice?
Yeah.
Are you going to be a spokesperson for cannabis, or are you actually going to be an advocate for natural healing, for holistic healing and plant medicine? Because you can't do both. Going back to the cannabis and kava, you know, cannabis, you know, with alpha pinene in it, can have the effect where it helps promote, that sounds the same, I'm saying promote, the opening of the air pathways in the lungs, of the bronchioles, making it a little bit easier to breathe. But a lot of times, people will actually have what is perceived as asthma attacks due to high stress and panic attacks or high anxiety. So more so than that pinene, a lot of the times it could just be that relaxation of thought, that calmness that will help kind of slow down and lower that sensation of an asthma attack. But you can get the same thing from kava. Now, what's going to be more beneficial for your lungs? Something that you just drink and then get that effect? Or something that you have to inhale through a combustible, you know, which is not in any aspect good for your lungs, you know. So when you're talking about lung health, something like kava would be more beneficial. But neither side really needs to be going after the other, because some people don't have that same effect to kava, that relaxing effect. So they're going to need more something along the lines of cannabis. Some people can actually get panic attacks from cannabis, which could exacerbate that asthmatic behavior. So they need to go towards something for kava. So you have to stop this whole, "Oh, mine can do everything and yours is a drug that you're dependent on and need to go away." Or shamed, you know, we're all standing in the crowd, shame, you know, it's like,
yeah.
Or we can come together and be like, "Hey, different things will affect people differently. Let's use plant medicine overall and not just pick one, like we're picking our favorite Pokemon to battle with."
Okay.
Bringing it to Pokemon.
Okay, well, I can't speak about Pokemon, but I also would encourage us to go a step further and try to change the words that we use when we're discussing these things. Dependency, addiction. Yes, those are very real words and they have, you know, serious meanings. But what does that actually mean to you? Are you dependent on pain relief? Does your body start to shut down if you don't have all of the things that help your system reach that homeostasis? You're physically dependent on something if that's the case, right?
Yeah, to be honest about it.
If you don't like the word addiction and it makes you bristle, well, think about this. How can you get through the day without smoking a pre-roll or taking an edible if you have to do it every day.
Or drinking kava.
Or drinking kava or taking kratom. Whatever it is, that is defined by many as an addiction. So it's, to me, it's like, let's stop making these words bad, like have negative connotations, you know, because we really should be looking at it from a harm reduction viewpoint.
Yeah. We can just look at it like it's a point of life. There's an addiction towards everything. People are addicted to healthy things. They're addicted to exercising. They're addicted to drinking water or milk. You know, some people are addicted to driving fast. Someone in college once told me that, you know, everyone chases the devil in their own way, whether they're smoking cigarettes or drinking a lot of alcohol or speeding down the street. Everyone is like built inside of them that they just have to have one thing that drives them to kind of go onto that side of things. And to look down on anyone for their choice in that is horrible. You know, I used to smoke cigarettes. That was horrible for me. That was disgusting and I destroyed my body.
Yeah, but
and
you couldn't just tell me about that at the time. Yeah. Nobody could tell us to quit when we were smoking.
Exactly. And I was just allowed to do it. I was just, at some point I had to go outside, but for a while I was allowed to even do it inside, mess up everyone else's day with it, you know? And that was perfectly fine as a society. And then it stopped, you know? But on the same hand, if I was at that same time to go outside and to hit a vape pen, even though they didn't exist then, they probably think I was a time traveler, or smoke a pre-roll, then they would lose their minds. So as times change, perceptions change. It's like, so why do we have to wait for that perception to change? Why can't we just change it and realize, no, everyone's going to have their thing. Some people find healing in certain aspects, some not. It's really something that needs to just be toned down, that negative annotation of, oh, that's an addiction, just tone it down.
Tone it down?
Tone it down. That's my new catchphrase. Tone it down.
Okay.
Go put it on a t-shirt.
Tone it down?
Tone it down.
Okay. Well, then you'll really be able to
make a new podcast. It's called Toning It Down with JR.
That'll be like your grumpy man era. Old grumpy man era. Tone it down.
Tone it down. Yeah. Come with a broom that I can knock on ceilings.
Yeah. There you go.
Noisy neighbors.
So, coming back to the reason why we're discussing this, we will be doing a special Kratom episode in the next episode. So, the Kratom episode won't be in our regular format. It will be a special episode, and we will continue to do special episodes that are not in our normal format. For instance, we are continuing our media member spotlight. However, we will now be calling it Higher Minded Media. We will have special discussions such as how to approach giving CBD to your child, or should you give CBD to your child. We will have things like that that will be standalone specials that are not in our regular feed, so to speak, but it will show up in our feed. So if you're subscribed, you will see that. And if you have no interest in Kratom, feel free to skip over that episode, but we will really be doing a deep dive into the plant, into the history of it, the legal status. We'll have Dr. Grinspoon speak about the medical applications. So I think it's going to be very interesting. And the reason why we're putting it in the Your Highness feed is because Kratom is really the reason why we're in cannabis. And that's one of the reasons why we're so hung up on this topic about people having an elitist attitude about the plant, because it's really what woke us both up and made us realize that plant medicine is a much more viable alternative for us. And it's really the reason why we changed our whole lifestyles to devote to plant medicine access for everyone. So stay tuned for that. Before we end, I'm going to end it on a quote that I'm actually pulling from Sophie's piece that I mentioned earlier. She ended her article on this quote, and I think it's a really good one. It's Dr. Hart, by the way. We have to guard against drug elitism. The thinking that your drug is better than someone else's drug. Whatever works best for you is fine. Okay, so stay tuned for a closer look into the Florida cannabis scene with Angie Willoughby aka the Green Baker.
Whoop whoop.
Ever feel like life's stress gets to be too much? Welcome to Mitra Gaia, your natural wellness partner. We are the number one rated provider of Kratom, a 100% natural plant-based solution used in Asia for centuries to help increase focus, energy, and relaxation. Want to know more? Use the code YHPOD to get 10% off your first order today. That's MitraGaia.com and code YHPOD for 10% off.
And now I am joined by Angie Willoughby, a.k.a. the Green Baker, one of my favorite people in cannabis. How are you doing today, Angie?
I am good. I'm amazing and sweaty. It's Florida.
Well, you're always amazing and probably always sweaty because you live in Florida.
Exactly. So, you know, it's business as usual here in the Sunshine State.
So, Angie, let's start by taking a snapshot of the Florida cannabis scene. And I know that's a lot to ask because I was there at one point and I know it was a mess back then. So what is the current attitude among consumers and small business owners right now?
You know, I think the attitudes and, you know, please, this is just my humble opinion from being in this industry for 5 years now here in Florida. You know, the consumers are, you know, the registered medical marijuana patients has steadily been going up here in the state of Florida over the past, you know, 2 to 3 years, right? Nothing super significant, but it is a steady upward movement. So we see that there are a lot of medical patients kind of coming on board still. Even this is now like 6 or 7 years after the medical marijuana program has started here in Florida. And so we know that there is still a huge need. The sentiments have not really changed, the public sentiment. I think people are really wanting adult use. I've heard from a couple of very entrenched sources that that's going to be coming about sooner than later, you know, adult use here in the state. And so I think that that's something that a lot of people are really looking forward to. And, you know, as a small cannabis business, of course, it's still a David and Goliath kind of thing here in the state. You know, we're, you know, not really fighting, but we're just kind of making our peace with vertical integration here with the MSOs. And, you know, and then just, you know, trying to kind of carve out our space here within our state. And, you know, so it's kind of a live and let live kind of thing. We have a new commissioner of agriculture, Wilton Simpson, who took over for Nikki Fried, who, you know, Nikki was very vocal, very active within the cannabis industry here in Florida. Mr. Simpson was kind of tight-lipped about it in his running, and really has not said anything really about cannabis except for taking a very large and significant donation from Trulieve, and then standing behind the amendment that was made to, you know, kind of put more constraints on packaging. You know, they're very particular about making sure that especially edibles are not attractive to children, or they can't be seen or made into like attractive shapes or colors. And so, you know, he did take a very significant stance against that, which, you know, I think we all can kind of agree. We want, you know, we want things to be safe for children.
But that makes it difficult, right? For the small business owners, for sure.
Well, it does make it difficult because now you're having to relabel, right? You're having to relabel, you're having to repackage. If you, you know, had any sort of significant packaging that had any sort of colors or, you know, whatever, you know, as a small business, it's harder to pivot in that way. You know, the MSOs can kind of do that a little bit more strategically because they deal in volume. And, you know, but if you're a small operator, kind of like myself or many others that I know, you know, trying to stay up on these regulations, it can be very costly and time consuming. So, Yeah.
So what do you wish that people outside of Florida understood about the cannabis industry there?
What do I wish the people? I wish that they knew that we were a part of the South. I think, you know, I know that it is very significant, you know, having to come here and create things here in Florida, just because of the travel time, right? The distance is really challenging for people. But we need a social equity. We need advocates here within our state. And there are a lot of really incredible organizations that are doing some incredible things in many different parts of the United States. And sometimes I kind of feel like, you know, we kind of, the bus kind of just keeps going, you know, and kind of misses us at times. And so, yeah, so I want people to know, like, as the third most populous state in the United States, and with a, you know, couple billion dollar, you know, cannabis industry here in our state, you know, we need those types of resources too. So don't forget about us here in the little peninsula, the doodangle of the United States.
It is weird how people don't really like put Florida in the South. Like when they're talking about Southern states, they don't really consider Florida. It's really strange.
It's like its own little universe here in the state, you know?
And it is very populated. When I was living there, I was living in a very small part, like Worth, but that was more populated than, I don't remember the exact city, but I remember reading that it was more populated than a lot of the bigger cities in other states. Yeah, and it's only like a 7 square mile radius.
Yeah, Lake Worth is a tiny little city, you know. And there, I mean, I'm pretty sure if you came here, you'd be like, "Wow, I don't even recognize it," because there is a lot of gentrification happening in Lake Worth right now. And then, you know, the advent of, you know, COVID and people working remotely and working from home, so that has only dumped more bodies into our state. You know, and these are people that are coming from states that may have a medical program, may not have a medical program, or maybe a rec state. And so they're coming here to Florida because they have the advantage of being able to like work from home now, right? So they can like work from anywhere, and they're choosing to get away from the horrible weather. And, you know, maybe, especially for the New Yorkers, you know, the more expensive living,
right?
I'm doing air quotes for right. those that can't. But the more expensive living, you know, of other states to come down here to Florida, you know, so we're also having to contend with that. You know, a lot of the people that live here are, you know, snowbirds. There's a huge snowbird population that still lives here. And a lot of them are coming from Canada, which Canada has a fully, you know, legalized cannabis, you know, program in Canada. And they're coming here, you know, 4 to 6 to 8 months out of the year to live here in Florida, you know. So there's a lot of this kind of like melting pot, you know, that's kind of happening. And it's like, who really is taking responsibility for these things here in Florida, right? Because it is such a kind of
transient state.
Vagrant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a migratory state, you know. And so it's really like, so that's why I'm like, these significant initiatives and these significant, you know, organizations that are working to get social equity and all these kind of really important things, they kind of miss us, you know, and it's understandable why, but, you know, I want people to know that we're here and we need help and we need, you know, to galvanize and be able to set these things in motion here in Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. People need to take Florida seriously as a state, more so than just a vacation place or somewhere to escape for half the year, because I know how that is. I met more people from Maryland when I lived in Florida than I do living in Maryland.
Like, I believe it. It's that kind of state.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of state. So there's the blessings of it, you know, is that we have incredible weather. We have an incredible ecosystem for agriculture and growing, you know. But there's also that like kind of migrant, you know, kind of gypsy lifestyle that lives here in Florida.
Yep.
So, and then the fact that, you know, it's such a large piece of land, you know, it's so difficult to get from the southern part of the state back up to the northern part of the state, you know, and even out of the state. So it just, there's a lot of things that make it it a bit of a challenge, but it's so worth it.
Yeah.
Because there are, you know, I feel like if we can get things here started in Florida, then it can influence so many other states, right? Because we have so many people from so many other states, you know? So it feels like if we can galvanize and get things rolling here, it would kind of plant that seed for a lot of people. And then when they go back home, or when they're talking to their friends, or they're talking to their family in maybe other states that don't have a medical program or don't have a adult use program, it'll kind of plant that seed. You know, it's, I feel like, I always say, like, Florida's the gateway, right? We're the gateway to the Caribbean. We're the gateway to, you know, your Europe and all of these different places. And so it's like, if we can kind of figure out how to plant that seed here in Florida, it will inevitably affect so many other places. So
yeah. And also just a little extra mention that the rehab population is so big in Florida. Like, there's so many rehabs. And
huge,
to think
girl,
about how,
huge.
Yeah, to think of the difference to have that as a safer alternative for a lot of people who are in rehabs, for whatever the reason, you know, but if those
Absolutely.
Rehabs would embrace cannabis as something that was a therapy instead of, mm-hmm. you know, but anyway, so yep. that's another discussion altogether, but there is, I think Florida has a lot of untapped potential, especially when it comes to cannabis. And so piggybacking on that a little bit, what are your hopes for the future of the cannabis scene in Florida?
Oh, wow. My hopes. I have so many hopes for Florida. You know, really, I think one of the main things and one of the biggest things, and especially as I've been dialed into much more significantly to other states, you know, I was just able to, I had the fortune to just finish like a 6-week course with the BCB Mastermind, which is a minority CEO, like cannabis mastermind. And so it was like all these minority businesses from, and we were the Southern cohort, but we had a lot of people from New York, tons of people from New York, tons of people from Jersey. We had people from Atlanta and Michigan. And just being able to like work with them and see kind of how things are flowing within their states, it gave me so much hope for Florida and like what we are capable of doing. And I think, you know, one of my biggest hopes is really that we're able to, one, holistically integrate our agriculture, our, you know, because people always think of Florida kind of as a tourist state, right? They're like, oh, it's Disney and it's, you know, it's tourism. But at the heart of Florida, we are an agriculture state,
mm-hmm.
right? We supply more than 50% of the agriculture during the winter time mm-hmm. for the United States, right? So at the heart, like, yes, there is that tourism, that hospitality, it's always going to be there. But at the heart of our state is this agricultural spirit, right? And this agricultural, like, roots that we have here in Florida. And so I really hope that we can holistically figure out some way to integrate hemp and cannabis into our agricultural system here in Florida in a way that's equitable and accessible for, you know, the farmers that are here, especially minority farmers. So that's one thing that my hope is really, you know, like I'm really thinking about and meditating on, and how can I help and how can I assist and, you know, support that. And, you know, and then the other component is the social equity, right? We have no social equity or even the whimpers of a social equity program here in Florida. And so that's my other hope. You know, there are so many people that are in jail because of cannabis. And now we have significant and some of the largest multi-state operators making money here in Florida in the same exact game that they're that are have people in jail, mm-hmm. you know. And so I really hope that now that we kind of have this medical program up and running, and it's running, you know, I wouldn't say completely efficiently, but it's a system, you know,
yeah.
and it takes time. But now that we have that up and running and people are now looking towards adult use, those are my two really big hopes. Because to me, you know, so many people are like, oh, they should just make it rec. They should just make it adult use. They should just let people do what they want. And I'm like, do you not understand how like entrenched that is? That's not an easy task. Like, how do you account for finance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know the Safer Banking Act has been passed through, right? So that's really great on a federal level, but that doesn't say anything about on a state level, you know. We have people that are in prison because of cannabis. How do we account for those people? Like, you can't just open the floodgates and be like, oh, just let people do whatever they want and not have some sort of significant mechanisms in place to right the wrongs that have already happened, right?
Yeah.
Black farmers are still fighting to get licenses to be able to become MMTCs here in the state, you know? So these are significant things that we have to address or have to understand and know how to overcome before we just open the floodgates and go, oh yeah, it's adult use now, right? Because that's not really going to help anybody, you know? And if anything, it's going to make it worse, right? Because yeah. Now there's going to be other players coming into the scene trying to capitalize on that adult use now. And, you know, we've seen this in California, right? California has had the longest programming in place since the 90s, like late 80s, early 90s. And we've seen some of the backtracking that they've even had to do, right? As they've brought different segments of the cannabis industry on board in their state. So I'm really hoping that we can kind of learn from them, you know, and kind of maybe not stumble or have those same blocks. And, you know, social equity and really getting back to the heart of agriculture, I think are, you know, two really big stumbling blocks or big hurdles that I think we have to address before we can fully go, oh, we're adult use here, you know. So those are my two hopes, really, that we're able to really address those things.
Those are good hopes. So where can people find you and how can they support you? You don't have to specifically, we'll link it in the show notes, but, you know, just talk about what you've got going on.
You know, IG and I have we have a love-hate relationship, IG and I. But, you know, IG is always great. I'm trying not to use that as much, but you can always follow my website, www.thegreenbaker, and that's thegreenbkr.com. That's my website. All of my contact information is on there, and my socials too. And people can get in touch with me that way if they have any questions. I'm all about educating. I'm all about helping people to understand how best to use edibles in a much more accessible way. And, you know, not to let that fear of your bad edibles trip get in the way of you, you know, maybe expanding that repertoire of consumption that you, you know, may have. So, yeah, that's the way that you can, that's the best way to get in touch with me. And all my numbers and everything is definitely on there. So, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and experience with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be sweatily amazing here on on your podcast. I so appreciate it. And, you know, as much as I can bring attention back to Florida and kind of let people know that, you know, hey, we're still here, you know, we're still fighting, then I'm going to do it, you know, awesome. Because I think it's so important. So, and I appreciate you for giving me the platform to do that because, aww, you know, that's sweet. Amazing.
Thank you for listening. Until next time, stay high and beautiful. This episode was produced by Your Highness Media. Audio editing by JR Crash. Intro music by Your Mom Likes My Music. Subscribe to our Substack, Your Highness Newsletter, for the latest announcements and event updates.